everyone, welcome back to our podcast. Today we're doing a stat medical topic talking about oxygen therapy.
Oxygen, so
oxygen is a drug, so it's really important that you prescribe it. You don't just throw it on the patient, but make sure that you've prescribed it as well. It's the most commonly used drug, probably, in emergencies, and it's safe. Very safe, very, very, very super safe most of the time. In terms of when we might use it, all acutely unwell patients should be started on 15 litres of oxygen via a non-rebreathe mask. Take the thinking out, don't try and be too clever. Essentially, if a patient is acutely unwell, get 15 litres on and then do your ATE assessment, and you can always come back later and adjust your oxygen. In terms of thinking about our targets, you don't want to target at 100% because that's too much, and actually over-oxygenating the patient can make things a whole lot worse. You can get reperfusion injury and oxygen-free radicals and all sorts of awful, horrible things, so don't do that. You really want to be targeting around 94 to 98% in most patients. If you're concerned about hypercapnic respiratory failure, then your target would be 88 to 92%. If you've got a patient who has carbon monoxide poisoning, then you want to be increasing your oxygen target to up to 100%. You really want to bombard them with oxygen. Treat your patient, not the numbers, and think about the context. So make sure you're looking at your patient and how they're doing. Lots of elderly patients will be rumbling along with an undiagnosed respiratory issue and might have SATs of about 92 to 93%, and that would be their normal.
That's a good point, because certainly in paediatrics as well, The targets are a bit lower, so we tend to be happy with SATs of 92 or above. And actually, if a child sat there with SATs of 92% and they're well and they're happy, putting oxygen on them is going to be distressing.
It's going to get them really stressed. Exactly. They're going to be crying. They're going to be pulling it off. They're going to be tearing out their hair and their mother's hair. It's not fun.
And the exact is probably the same for some of the elderly patients who might have some bit of dementia or whatever as well. And if you start slapping oxygen on them willy-nilly, then you're going to get the same response without the mother's hair being pulled out.
I don't think that he would like that.
Where are you putting your oxygen?
We talked a little bit about hypercapnic respiratory failure and our lower targets of 88 to 92%. What's all that about?
Today we're talking about a thing called hypoxic drive, which we've taught for many years, and I remember teaching it for many years to a whole generation of medical students who are now fully qualified doctors, and to them I must apologise, because actually it's not true.
What? You lie! Everything I based my medical knowledge on is a lie.
If you base your entire medical knowledge on hypoxic drive, you're not seeing enough patients. So normally your respiratory drive is driven by carbon dioxide, and the traditional teaching was that if you chronically have a raised CO2, then your respiratory centre in your brain switches to reading the low oxygen levels. So getting used to your low oxygen levels, and therefore if you over-oxygenate those patients, they lose respiratory drive and they stop breathing. Now, that actually isn't true, and actually it's a bit of a misunderstanding about what happens in COPD and other sort of type 2 respiratory failure type patients, i.e. CF, bronchiectasis, those types of patients as well. But there, your lungs are actually very good at matching your perfusion to your ventilation. And so when you've got COPD or whatever, I'm just going to use COPD as the term for now on. If you're a COPD patient, then they generally vasoconstrict the more hypoxic alveoli. So you get a better VQ match, so ventilation to perfusion match. Now, if you give those patients excess oxygen, all the alveoli get better oxygenated, not just the ones that are being perfused well. So that vasoconstriction to the hypoxic alveoli is reversed. So actually you end up getting a worse VQ mismatch, which actually leads to a worse respiratory outcome for those patients. So although the teaching is wrong, the main message is correct. So I don't feel that guilty. To me, the end has justified the means. So actually the message is the same, but the science is slightly different. So don't over-oxygenate your patients who are at risk of CO2 retention. Target SATs of those patients should be 88 to 92. However, there's a small caveat to that. Disease is a spectrum. So if you've got mild COPD, if you've got mild CF, then actually you may well be all right with SATs of 97%. You know, you might be sat there quite comfortably with maybe even SATs of 100%. And so again, it comes back to that message of treating the patient in front of you rather than treating the numbers.
So my patient needs oxygen, Katrina. How am I going to give it to them?
Well, it depends a bit on how much they need and I guess what conditions they have. For example, most patients who need about 1 to 5 litres of oxygen, we can give that to them quite easily with nasal cannulae. This is a bit better tolerated by patients because it's not a mask covering the whole of their mouth. They can still eat, they can still drink, they can still speak. And for patients who are a bit more confused as well, it's not as, doesn't feel as invasive as like a proper oxygen mask. So this is good for patients who are mildly hypoxic. So we can give them 1 to 5 litres, can maybe give them 6, but you probably should move to a mask. And the FiO2 that you're giving there is 24 to 40%. So if you want to give a slightly higher rate of oxygen, so about 6 to 10 litres, then you probably need to give it via a mask, so simple face mask or a Hudson mask. This does cover the mouth and nose, has holes in the mask for CO2 to be exhaled, and you're giving about 35 to 60% FiO2.
I was in hospital as a patient once with pneumonia, and I really didn't like the masks, because at least with the nasal cannulae, you know, like you're saying, you can still eat and drink and talk to people more easily, but the masks are very, very drying, and the air felt very cold, and it got quite steamed up, and it was just so hard to communicate with people. Obviously, I needed the oxygen, and I was grateful for it, but they're not particularly comfortable or pleasant for the patients.
Mm. Yeah, and that's that point you're making, isn't it? You know, you can go up to 6 litres with the nasal cannula. We see it generally in the pre-hospital arena, but there's the nasal cannula with the sort of the reservoir bevel thing. It's like a huge snot ball. The first time I saw it, I was just only thought it was a huge like snot ball, but it's almost works like a little reservoir bag. You can get better FiO2 with those, which is quite useful, and obviously has advantages over the full face mask.
So then moving on, for patients who are more acutely unwell or needing quite significant rates of oxygen on the ward, you'd consider a non-rebreathe if you're giving about 10 to the max of 15 litres.
So that's what we're going to use in our acutely unwell patient at the beginning, isn't it? We're going
yes,
to throw that on.
Before we think anymore.
Place gently
on.
So that's what we're giving right at the beginning of our A2E. These masks, they have a reservoir bag attached so that you can give the higher FiO2, and it has a one-way valve to allow CO2 to be exhaled, prevent REMA entering so that you can give 80 to 100% of oxygen. And don't forget, when you're connecting it up, pop your finger over the top of the reservoir bag to allow it to fill up. With all these previous masks we've spoken about before, it's a bit more difficult to give more accurate concentrations of oxygen. So if we want to do that, particularly with patients who have COPD, or as we've talked about before, patients at the risk of hypercapnic respiratory failure, then we can give a Venturi, and that helps us give more graduated volumes of oxygen and can titrate it to their SATs. Here in the UK, the volumes that we can give are 24, 28, 35, 40 and 60%. Finally, you have bag valve masks. So this is a face mask which is attached to a bag with a reservoir bag. So this is used to ventilate patients in cardiac arrest or respiratory arrest. When you're being trained in your ILS or ALS courses, then you need to know to put 2 hands over the mask and make sure you've got a friend with you for the bag. And again, this you can give 80 to 100% FiO2.
And actually, in many countries where they don't have ventilators, they will use bag valve masks, and they'll have family members be doing the ventilating by literally just using the bag valve masks while they're waiting on a ventilator. So I saw that out in Kathmandu in the ITU there, they just didn't have enough ventilators.
So there are a few other ways to deliver oxygen in terms of ventilatory support, but we can do a separate podcast on that where we're going to cover CPAP and BiPAP. Look out for that.
Mm.
Emma can't wait. That will get out to you within the next 6 years.
Giving yourself plenty of time there. Another thing in terms of oxygen that you'll come into contact a lot when you're out on the wards is patients that are on oxygen at home or long-term oxygen therapy. Probably the one that this is most commonly used for is patients with quite severe COPD. So there are particular rules and regulations around who can have this, and they're all very clearly documented in the NICE guidelines. But just to touch on a few points, patients with COPD who have a PaO2 of less than 7.3, or if their PaO2 is between 7.3 or 8 on an ABG, but who also have extra conditions like polycythemia, peripheral edema, or evidence of pulmonary hypertension, then they can qualify for home oxygen. It's really, 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 really important that they don't smoke, or that anyone else in the family doesn't smoke in the house, because they're going to blow themselves to kingdom come if things go wrong. So how
important was that, Katrina?
Really, 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 really important.
Four releases.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Unless you want the firemen to come over.
you can't see that, guys, but Emma just did a... Emma had a special face. I think she's going to try and get some home oxygen.
What are we going to have as our take-home messages? Number one, treat the patient and not the numbers. Number two, over-oxygenating COPD patients is bad for them, but hypoxia is worse and will lead to death quicker. So remember that, okay? You're more likely to die from hypoxia than you are from hyperoxia. Number three, have to think about how you're going to deliver that oxygen to the patient. Not if it's an ACE and they're acutely unwell, then you're going to just go straight for the non-rebreathe. But otherwise, when you've got some more time to think, just be careful about thinking how you're delivering it. And in some cases, for example, if it's an elderly patient who maybe has dementia and is confused, it might be better and better tolerated to use nasal specs rather than trying to go for a heads and mask that they keep taking off and that they're not happy with. Some oxygen is always better than no oxygen.
And the fourth take-home message is that if you do want lots of firemen to come around, keep smoking whilst you've got your home oxygen.